Reverend, I have someone who has a building name who I think was maybe the largest vote getter in the state of New York when he ran for the office of Attorney General. And I'm talking about Robert Abrams, a friend to so many, respected by so many, and we're very fortunate to have you on the program, Bob.
Well, Joe, thanks. Thanks a lot. I mean, once I was on a plane after I left public office, I was sitting on the aisle and I was coming back from Washington, and a woman was coming up the aisle and she looked at me and she said, did you used to be somebody? So you know, when you're out of office, how quickly they forget. So it's nice to have somebody like you say some nice things. I appreciate it.
Well, you've been a friend for many, many years. So we wanted to talk about Senator Joe Lieberman, who was very unique in that political arena. And you had, I know, a special relationship with him. Talk about him as you knew him.
Joe was the best. He was just absolutely the best. He was one of the great public servants of our time, a man of extraordinary ability, total integrity, incredible courage. I was so privileged to call him a friend. We worked together as fellow attorneys general. He was the attorney general of Connecticut, and I was the attorney general of New York. And we shared many, many experiences together. And, when my wife called me and said, Bob, you won't believe it, a few days ago, and she told me that Joe passed away, I couldn't handle it. He was just such a terrific guy, and the public knew that because, you know, in that race, I think you mentioned it in the prior segment, he lost the Democratic primary and ran for the United States Senate as an independent, and he won. Everybody mm-hmm. thought that it would be absolutely impossible, and he won because they saw who the man was. He transcended party lines and party dogma. And he was just a wonderful human being, a role model for all of us.
So what was it most about Joe Lieberman that captured you? I got to know him. We did a book signing together in Brooklyn, and we had a long conversation about the Sabbath. And I was so impressed with how he navigated his commitment to his faith, and yet understood the practical issues that come into play when you have to make adjustments to that faith. And he saw the Sabbath not as a day to be worshiped, but as a principle to be practiced. And I really respected his whole take on that in his book. What was it about him that intrigued you?
He was genuine. He was, you know, in public life and other facets of our society, we see people in public and they sort of wear a mask. With Joe, it was always real. It was genuine. He was a guy of incredible decency. And whoever he encountered, it didn't matter whether you were low, high, or in between. I mean, whether you were a taxi cab driver, a waiter, a dishwasher, or somebody who is preeminent in our society, I mean, all people were treated equally, and the sense of decency emerged. So, and on top of it all, even though he was this person of tremendous ability, had a very keen intellect, and he had so many fine qualities, he also was very humble. He was never full of himself. And, whatever position he had, whether it was in the state legislature, attorney general, United States senator, candidate for vice president, candidate for president, he always had this humility. And so he was truly a remarkable mm-hmm. person. And I was so privileged to be able to earn his friendship. We did many things together over a 40-year period. My wife and I were devastated when we heard the news.
By the way, Bob, as one who's known you for many years, you have many of those qualities. You know, many times I've been with you, never call attention to, you know, yourself that much. You're always conferring plaudits on others. I want to tell you one quick story, and then I want to talk about your book. In Pittsburgh, Joe Lieberman was scheduled to speak at a hotel. And there were the cameras were there waiting for the arrival of the limousine. And he arrives, gets out, and Secret Service runs to the trunk of the car and takes out this long item enclosed in plastic. And people thought it's a rifle Secret Service is taking out. And it turned out to be a palm branch, the lulav, because that was the week of Sukkot, of Tabernacles. And it was an intermediate day when you could travel. So here he traveled campaigning with the lulav to show I'm a proud American and I'm a proud Jew, and they're not antithetical.
And he never wore it on his sleeve. You know, that's the other thing. That's who he was. That's part of the genuineness I was talking about. People would just have to accept him for who he is. And so it was always unvarnished. It came straight from the shoulder, from the heart. And that's why he was admired by many. Look, a lot of people, you know, disdained him also because of his independence. He went against the grain many times on very controversial issues. But there's another thing. Whoever, if he was opposed to somebody, it was never the discussion was never with meanness. It was never with disdain. It was never with anger. It was trying to get to the heart and the merits of what was at stake. And it always ended, you know, with a chuckle, with good humor, with decency, with warmth. I mean, he was an exceptional guy and somebody who we should always remember because of all the things he taught us.
Yeah, and that authenticity is probably why, as a Democrat, he was able to earn quite a bit of support from prominent conservatives. And, you know, that wasn't common. He was able to do that. And I think it's because of that authenticity and genuineness of which you speak.
Yeah. And he was willing to cross, party lines and go across the aisle and join hands with others. Create coalitions. He was a very wonderful guy, and it just continues to pain me to think that we still don't have him in our midst, because we desperately need that kind of humanity and leadership.
Bob, you consider yourself the luckiest guy in the world.
Well, Joe, that's the name of the book that I wrote a couple of years ago. It took me years to write it.
Right. Why? Why do you consider yourself the luckiest guy?
Well, I mean, there's a huge laundry list because I'm still living and I'm going to approach my 86th birthday because I married a wonderful woman and we're approaching in a few months our 50th anniversary because the Lord gave me two fabulous daughters who gave me two wonderful sons-in-law, and the daughters and sons-in-law produced 8 grandchildren for me, all of whom, by the way, live in Jerusalem, because I was able to lead a very exciting life. I never dreamt. My father had a candy store. He dropped out of high school to help earn some money for the family, to work in the family store. What an opportunity this country gave me. I never dreamt that I'd be able to lead such an exciting life, to be a member of the assembly, the legislature, to be the borough president of the Bronx, to represent a great diversity of people, Italians, Irish, African Americans, Hispanics, Jews, all coming together to live in the Bronx, 12 community boards trying to bring unity among all those communities. There was a car accident. I was running for borough president, coming down from Albany, and I fell asleep at the wheel, and my car went off the road. I went off the embankment, and I got out of the car without a scratch and continued to drive down to New York City. I'm the luckiest guy in the world because, 12 years ago, I went to see a doctor, and he said, "You have a malignant tumor. We have to operate immediately." And he called it a well-differentiated liposarcoma. And he told me after the operation that it was 30 centimeters long and it weighed 25 pounds. And I needed 12 pints of blood during the operation. So, Joe, I think I'm a very lucky guy. And, in fact, the luckiest guy in the world.
Just tell the Reverend.
But you also, I was just going to say, but you also reached beyond your own faith and you were able to understand and build bridges of peace. Talk about the resolution of the controversy that the Jewish community had with the Latter-day Saints. Rabbi and I work with Elder David Buckner, and LDS has done a lot of work together with us, especially with our Commission of Religious Leaders. But you played a very important role in resolving a controversy between the Jewish community and LDS. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I had a client. I was in private practice of law, and I had a client who was a member of the LDS Church. And we got to be very close. We worked together on the matter for a number of years. He was based in Arizona. He and his partner and colleagues were also from Phoenix, and they'd come up every month for several days. So we'd have meals together. So we got to be very, very friendly. And one day he said, "Would you be willing to bring a delegation of Jewish leaders to Salt Lake City to meet some folks in the LDS Church?" And I said, "Sure, but can you tell me why?" I said, "Well, just for the two communities to get to know each other better." And so as I tried to put together the list of leadership, somebody told me, "Bob, are you aware that there's current hostility between the two groups?" And I found out that there was a press conference by the Jewish community attacking the church, and it turned out to be a controversy relating to an element of the LDS faith that they believe that there should be an opportunity for proxy baptism.
Right.
And some members of the Jewish community, particularly those who survived the Holocaust, felt, "You mean that church is converting my brothers and sisters and members of my family who were murdered by the Nazis in the Holocaust, who died proudly as Jews?" And so there was a misunderstanding as to really what was taking place, but there was also a lot of hostility. So when I heard that, I was unaware of the circumstances, and I said, "Well, maybe, when I go there, I'll try to find out a little more about it." And so the delegation, a very prominent delegation, went, and I was talking to one of the elders of the church, and I raised this issue. I said, "What's this all about?" And he said, "It pains us that there has become this schism, this division." And he explained to me that there wasn't, some conversion that was being forced upon people. He said, "In our faith, we believe when a person passes away, the soul lives on, and we give an option, an opportunity for the soul to accept a baptism, a proxy baptism, and the soul could say yes or the soul could say no. So it's the soul that decides." And so I had a little further refinement and understanding, and I went back to New York, and little did I know that it would take me 18 months, but I talked with significant leadership in the Holocaust survivor community, and with the leadership of the LDS Church, and we worked out a joint statement of mutual understanding, and that began years of further friendship and warmth between the two groups, things that we did together. You know, and I found that there was so much reverent commonality between the two groups, even though obviously the Jewish community different from the LDS church. But what did I find? I found that there was a real commitment to family, that there was a real commitment to education, that there was a real commitment to philanthropy, that there was a real commitment to success, hard work, disproportionate success within the community. And, you know, and there was so many fundamental values that were similar between the two groups. And so as time went on, there were more and more opportunities for us to get together. I then found out that there was one of the leaders of their community 175 years before, named Orson Hyde, who was directed to go to Israel, to Mount of Olives, and to do a dedicatory prayer and to say, this is the land of the Jewish people. It's going to be rebuilt with its capital, Jerusalem. And I found out that, gee whiz, that happened almost 175 years ago. And gee whiz, next year is going to be the 175th anniversary. And I said, maybe we should have a Jewish LDS delegation go and celebrate that anniversary. And we put together a number of people, including Rabbi Joseph Potasnik and Joe Lieberman, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we had this incredible meeting gathering in Jerusalem. So it's been a source of tremendous pride for me to be able to help be a bit bridge builder and put these two communities together. Yeah. And not only here in New York, but across the country, as we reach out and have dialogue and breakfasts and lunches and community conversations in various places throughout the United States, including
Well said. I'm glad you got a chance to share that, because Rabbi and I focused on interfaith dialogue, and it begins with finding common ground and common values, shared values. And we realize that we have more in common than we do differences.
And
so I'm really glad you got to share that story, Bob.
Thanks to Robert Abrams, we have developed a very special relationship with that community, and we do much together. So I would say, Bob, that we are also some of the luckiest people in the world in knowing you and being the beneficiaries of all the great things that you have done. The only thing I ask is, given your car driving experience, tell me where you're going to be for the week. I just want to avoid those streets. All right, Robert Abrams, former Attorney General of the State of New York. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you very much.